that will aid in the event of natural disasters or other state emergencies, according to a press release. If Florida moves ahead with the DeSantis plan to reestablish the civilian force, it would become the 23rd active state guard in the country. Representative Charlie Crist, who is running as a Democrat to challenge the governor in 2022, tweeted, quote, "No governor should have his own hand-picked secret police." The number of long-term unemployed fell by 136,000 in November, continuing a downward trend since early 2021, as the economy and labor market have rebounded. However, the decrease was the smallest since April, when long-term unemployment fell by 35,000 people. Long-term unemployment is a period of joblessness that lasts more than 6 months. The labor force grew, as did the share of employed Americans, according to the November jobs report issued today. Currently in Washington, it's cloudy and 52 degrees. In New York, it's sunny and 45. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
Just as a programming note, Leonard Lopate at Large will return to these airwaves of WBAI on Tuesday at 1 p.m. It is now 1 minute past 2 p.m. Stay tuned for an expanded edition of EcoLogic coming up. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, then tell me where we gonna plant our seed. It makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for we could do. There's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is EcoLogic for September 3rd, 2021.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today's show includes terrific clips from some of your favorite past shows we know you will enjoy.
We have experts talking about butterflies.
health effects of indoor plants.
The plastic that bottled water comes in.
A movie about the biggest nuclear accident in U.S. history.
And what it's doing to the Dena people.
And music from the New York City Raging Grannies with Pete Seeger.
Let's get right into one of your all-time popular shows, Health Effects of Indoor Plants.
You mentioned that plants are more or less the same in the benefits they give us, but they're not more or less the same as far as what we should have in our homes and offices. Could you give us a few for instances?
Well, the criteria you have to look at to put in a plant or choose a plant for your home or the office are essentially the same. It's all driven by light, a temperature range that's acceptable to people, which will also make it acceptable for keeping plants alive, and your humidity levels. The primary drive is always the light. You determine how much light you have, and then you back in to the range of plants that will live in those light conditions.
So how do you find that out?
Well, low, medium, and high light is how we tend to classify plants. Indirect light or artificial light would tend to be more low light conditions as you move closer to the window and certain minimum hours of sunshine, direct sunshine, say 2 hours a day, you're moving into mid, and then high light would be more than that. And then you just choose plants that are appropriate to that.
So if you have a desk in the middle of the office or your living room and you want to put a plant, you're talking about, even though if you have a well-lit, you want a medium light or low-light plant?
If it's well-lit, you're talking medium to high light. If you're in the away,
even though it's not sunlight, even though it's artificial light?
Oh, absolutely.
Light.
Yeah, there's plenty of plants that will live under fluorescent lighting, incandescent lighting, indirect lighting, bounce lighting from the window throughout the space.
Fluorescent lighting is kind of interesting because there are no cloudy days. There are no rainy days. It's very even. No leaves get burnt. And provided the lights are on 8 or so hours a day, it really is sufficient. What they have found is the best is to have one cool and one warm tube, ratio of 1-to-1, that benefits the plants the most.
When you say, what does that mean?
You know, for example, let's say you have a fluorescent light above your desk and maybe there's 4 tubes. So if there's 2 cool and 2 warm, the plants react best to that.
Now, what about a home where you have a compact fluorescent light bulb, the kind that uses, you know, way less energy?
Any light that's available is going to benefit a plant.
It's that simple.
I didn't even realize that.
Now, how do you know which plant fits which light condition? If that's the major thing, there's a lot of plants at department stores. There's no one to ask. Are they usually labeled?
Well, that's really one of the votes to go to us as opposed to an department store.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to say that in a second, Madeline, because really, truthfully, Ken, this is one of the things where when you hear any negatives over the year about the problems that you find that people have health conditions, either in the home or in the office, you can a 99.9% track that to it being not professionally taken care of and or selected. So I'm not saying don't do this at home because it's America's favorite hobby. Absolutely everybody's going to do it at home. But get professional help. I mean, get... Well, I really do.
Is that all of us? Or?
Boy, God knows I need it. No, but get, you know, what Madeline is saying is that there is a science. These people have gone to a lot of school and have done a lot of very large, majestic projects to find out.
That's interesting.
You know, exactly this amalgam of light and air and what you need to have the perfect hardy plant for that area. And I think that that's where you do call somebody off the plantsatwork.org website that's in your area and say, can you come over and do a consultation with me?
There is so much literature having to do with plants. If somebody wishes to, there is really no problem about researching which plant is where. It is a mixture. I like to say it's a marriage of science and art. The art without the science doesn't work. The science without the art doesn't work. It's a beautiful mix.
Mm-hmm. And there's also the thing of since now you have a living thing in your place, somebody has to take care of it. And certainly hear a lot of people, oh, I don't have time to take care of a plant, or I'll forget and kill it, and nobody wants to kill anything. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's some plants that are hardier than others.
But it's like a puppy. You know, you get a puppy home, you have to know what to do. You have to care for it.
And I think some people don't get puppies for that very reason. At least they have respect for the puppy.
Right. But
one very good bit of news today is that plants, on a relative basis, are less expensive than they were 20 years ago. The cost of plants, and whether that's retail or at the commercial level, as Madeline and I provide, are lower compared to the increase in the cost of living, making it a very, very good value. It's an inexpensive way to decorate and do all the other wonderful things we've spoken about. But my point being, don't get too attached to the plant. You know, it's easy for us to go by the corner store and bring home a bunch of daisies for a few dollars, and it'll stay on the table for a week, and then we'll throw it out. Well, don't think that the plant has to last forever. Even if you have a quote-unquote black thumb, and that's often why people say, I can't take care of a plant because I have a black thumb, it's still worth trying. You can experiment with it. You can try it. There are hardier ones than...
So if one kind of plant doesn't work, try another kind.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it lasts 6 months or a year, you get the beauty of it, you get all the wonderful health benefits, and then you buy another one.
I've been telling clients for the last 25 years, plants generally cost less than 1% of your commercial office budget, but they give 40% of the image. When you walk into an office that has plants, you know it's a taken care of office.
And I remember a girlfriend I had years ago gave me a coleus for a present, her thought being, well, since I'm going to forget and I'm away a lot and everything else, and you know, that it's a hardy plant, and if I forget to water it, sometimes it'll survive it. And I went away for 4 weeks, and the person who was supposed to take care of my apartment never watered the plant for 4 weeks. I came back, and it looked dead. And in desperation, since it was a girlfriend who gave it to me, you know, I said, oh, you killed Donna's plant. And I put water on it, and it came back to life.
Sure. 4 weeks. They want to live. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, after 9/11, I remember going to One Liberty Place to our clients in One Liberty, and we hadn't been able to get into the building for some weeks, and it was wonderful that all the plants were alive. We really lost very little.
Yeah.
And Ken, a coleus, by our definition, is a very difficult plant. It needs a lot of light and a lot of water and a lot of attention. There's a lot.
I didn't do that.
You know, there's dozens. Yeah. There's 100 plants that are easier to care for.
Wow. We're also not talking about sub-irrigation. There's one could do sub-irrigation and not be dependent on watering.
I learn something every time I hear them. I have a plant sitting right next to me at my desk because of this show. I got the type of plant they recommended, and it's thriving. Their advice is really practical. They were amazing for the entire show. They talk about how plants give us cleaner and healthier air, indoors and outdoors, as well as lower absenteeism in schools and workplaces. You can have it by donating $40 to WBAI.
On the same disc is our interview with Carl Safina, talking about the BP blowout in the Gulf of Mexico.
That's also part of a package of 4 CDs with 5 shows for just $75. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
The package includes shows about the early days of fractivism, bottled water and the plastic it comes in, and demystifying the electricity grid.
We really appreciate your love for the environment and your support of Ecologic. And if you are stumped for holiday gifts, the CD or package is a great idea.
Coming up now is the New York City Raging Grannies singing Radical Environmentalists. That's one of the songs they play with the legendary Pete Seeger. A video of that concert is also available as a premium. Call 212-209-2950. Or go to give2wbai.org.
Oh, we're radical environmentalists. We're radical environmentalists. We like clean air and clean water, just like the farmer's daughter, 'cause we're radical environmentalists.
Yeah!
Oh, we like our veggies without pesticides. Beef and chicken fed with cows who die. veggies cause we're radical environmentalists. We like autos that will cause us no pollution. And we think laws should provide a safe solution. We like lawns grown without weed and feed. We'll toss out every gene splice. See, we're radical environmentalists.
Yeehaw!
We want power that can always be renewed.
And how?
And we want to change consumer attitudes.
Yes, indeed.
Recycle all your glass and paper. And you can tell your maker. You're a radical environmentalist.
Yee-hoo!
You're listening to Ecologic on WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Next up is a clip from a DVD about the biggest and yet least known nuclear accident in U.S. history and an interview with the filmmaker. The River That Harms is one of the most powerful environmental movies I know, and it's in a beautiful setting, the Southwest Desert, one of the most stunning environments in this country.
Uranium mining and milling leaves a lot of waste. At least 6 pounds of uranium come from each ton of ore, leaving tailings of fine-grained sandy leftovers. The tailings were stored behind an earthen dam, with waste ore that formed ponds on top of the tailings. Part of the dam was built on unstable ground, subject to flash floods. When the dam broke, the equivalent of 100 Olympic-sized swimming pools went down the river.
Wow.
What makes this worse, in a way, is that local people actually knew to avoid mining uranium. DNA prophecies from long ago told that uranium should be kept under the ground. It was said that uranium would harm us at the time of creation. God showed it to us and said it must stay in the earth because it would cause diseases and destruction. Here's a clip.
QE, an environmentalist who investigated the cause of the accident, discovered that United Nuclear knew there were problems with the dam long before it broke.
It noticed cracks in the dam over time and took pictures of those cracks. Those pictures of those cracks in the area of the eventual dam break were never released to the state agency until after the dam break.
Instead, UNC patched up the dam with bentonite, a type of clay, and continued to dump its uranium waste into the overloaded tailings pile. Soon afterwards, a chemical reaction between the bentonite and the acidic wastewaters created new cracks in the dam. Meanwhile, the swelling weight of the tailings pressed against the mended wall and the cracks grew larger. Then at 5:30 in the morning on July 16, 1979, the dam broke with a force that sounded like a thunderclap. Following the path of the river, the spill rushed past the Church Rock community, the city of Gallup, and the Navajo village of Manuelito near the Arizona border. Then it traveled farther downstream past Sanders, Arizona, and the Petrified Forest National Park. The spill reached the Little Colorado River, a distance of 120 miles. After the Church Rock catastrophe, the state shut down the mill and ordered the company to clean up the waste. The cleanup and the forced shutdown cost UNC millions of dollars. But most of this money covered losses from the forced shutdown rather than the cleanup. In fact, observers have described 40 workers with buckets and shovels attempting to clean up miles of radioactive waste. The cleanup concentrated on only 10 miles of the river, where radioactive hotspots settled after the flash flood.
On the reports that I've seen, it certainly doesn't begin to account for the total amount that was spilled, that while there was some cleanup, it appears to me anyway, that the vast majority was never really accounted for.
Dr. Al Goodman, a physiologist, has been studying the health impacts of uranium mining for a number of years.
The release of radioactive water into a stream with no concern as to who uses this water, where it ends up, also, it upsets me tremendously.
An investigation of state records and interviews with state officials reveal that New Mexico failed to protect the Navajo people from the obvious dangers created by uranium mining.
State officials permitted UNC to begin constructing their Church Rock Dam before it had been licensed. Then the state licensed United Nuclear without inspecting the dam. After the dam broke, the state allowed UNC to continue operating before all of the waste from the spill was cleaned up. Instead of forcing UNC to clean up the riverbed, both the state of New Mexico and the National Center for Disease Control merely recommended that the Navajo people keep their animals away from the river and warned them not to drink the water.
We were told to keep our children away from the river, but we can't avoid the river.
The officials told us that our livestock should not go near the water. But what are we supposed to do? We don't have any other water for them.
They place out some signs along the Rio Perco, but that was about all they had done. But, you know, animals aren't going to read signs and say, I can't go down in the river and, you know, not drink the water.
They told us not to live too close to the river. But where can we go? There is really no place for us to go.
And we have with us here on WBAI New York, Colleen Keane, the filmmaker. And that line about primitive man's fear of fire is you know, a person's fear of radiation just angers me every time I hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet...
When the UNC official was, it was a derogatory statement how he
sure.
was expressing it. It was from his it was just very derogatory. But that was his comment, and they didn't make didn't want to go on camera. They wouldn't agree to a full interview, but he did comment on a few things over the phone.
Yeah, I would imagine he doesn't really have any facts he can stand on. So, yeah, I can see why he wouldn't want to come on camera. But I guess the average person doesn't know much about radiation. So I in a way, that's accurate to almost every American.
Yeah, of course, we're all in fear of it.
Yeah, our science education is so poor that people don't realize what it does and what it can do. And the point about... we always talk about radiation causing cancer, but of course it causes other problems as well. You know, if it can cause cancer, it can certainly do other things. It's a whole slew of medical problems, but again, we're talking about real people with real lives that you got to meet mm-hmm. and you got to film, and I'm glad you did.
And one thing to bring attention to is there was a request at that time for the Center for Disease Control to do a baseline study. And what I understand is that they didn't do a baseline study on cancers because it was too low, a small population. They said it wouldn't be significant. And unfortunately, if there was some kind of baseline done at that time, they could tell, you know, how much the cancers had increased during that period of time and till today.
Well, sure.
So that was one of the things. In other populations, a baseline study would have been done. Automatically, it would have been
yep.
done.
Yep. That's a beautiful example of environmental racism right there, that they didn't bother to study them.
And I understand that there have been cancers of people in that area from... it's, you know, an area from Church Rock down to Manuelito is about probably like 20 miles. And there is, I've heard of people that I interviewed have died and had cancer and passed away. So it's certainly, and when you look at, this is high desert, and so we're close to the sun here. That could be one. But there's other considerations, the consideration of the wastewater that went, that UNC used constantly and that spilled down the Rio Perco and got into the dirt, and that could be carried to other to people as well as to animals. So yeah. There's different exposure levels here.
Yeah, I guess if you're going to be in business of uranium, you have to be cavalier about it, or how could you be in that business? But just because they're cavalier about it doesn't make it any less dangerous.
Yeah, and since I didn't have the opportunity to talk to them personally, I don't know what, you know, their thinking is, and what I would have liked to have really heard what is their position. And but UNC did make a lot of money over the years, and yeah. then it busted. You know, that's why they folded the company. There was a stockpile of uranium.
Yeah, and Leona Morgan
said this.
So it
pulled out when it was no longer profitable, of course.
She said there's 500 uranium mining and milling sites in New Mexico. And that's an awful lot of radioactive pollution.
Yeah, I don't think I said that.
No, I know she did. When Leona Morgan was out here for Climate Week, she was lecturing at the United Nations and at different groups throughout the area. She was at SUNY Stony Brook and talking about this and showing your film, by the way.
Oh, good.
A lot of people saw The River That Harms through Leona when she was here.
Oh, that's really good. So what thing
including
is amazing,
me.
I think, yeah, the film has a life of its own, and I think it comes from the elders. I think, you know, they wanted their voices to be heard. And usually films don't last this long. This is 26 years or 27 years, and they're no longer relevant. But it's interesting is that the relevancy of it seems to be more now today than it was, you know, over the years, where I didn't get a lot of attention over the years.
Cancer has a latency period, and I guess movies about cancer have a latency period. But I kind of wish it wasn't relevant.
Yeah. That was Colleen Keane, the filmmaker, and a clip from The River That Harms, which is available to you for a donation of $40 to support this radio show and WBAI. The film is also included in two premium packages, two different ones. One with Lakota Water Protectors and Ramapo Lenape, and the second with a great panel discussing grassroots versus big green activism. That's with Kim Pratchik, Tim Keating, J.K. Canepa, and Donna Stein. Either package is available for a donation of $75. Call 212-209-2950 or go to givetowbai.org.
This is such an important topic, and as more nuclear plants are decommissioned, agency oversight has to be so much better than it was at Rio Puerco. Activists are aided with the information and networking provided on Ecologic, which is another reason why we think you would like to support our show and WBAI. What other radio station is going to give you this information? We take the radio out of radioactive. Call 212-209-2950 or go to givetowbai.org.
Coming up now are the New York City Raging Grannies singing their song about air pollution, Smokey.
On top of old Smokey, all covered with smog, I lost my true lover in the polluted fog. A courting's a pleasure, a parting's a grief, but the foul air
On the CD, you will hear the full episode, which includes a financial... Oh, wait a minute. I'm reading the wrong thing. Nestle's North American Water Division changed its name to Blue Triton last April. What are they hiding? Ecologic listeners might remember a hashtag Crunch Nestle campaign against the bottling of public water for private profit. The plastic that bottled water comes in leaches into the water and we drink it. That's just one of the health and environmental hazards of bottled water.
The next clip discusses the difference, or lack thereof, between tap and bottled water. You hear Ruth Kaplan of the Sierra Club Water Privatization Task Force and Sandra Steingraber. If not a goddess, as Ken says, she is at least one of his three favorite environmentalists. The other two are Rachel Carson and Pete Seeger.
So you get, you know, an awful lot of ads and pictures on bottles of how wonderful bottled water is, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Nestle has a lot of brands, and one of its brands is Ice Mountain. It makes it look like it's coming from the Rockies or something like that. It's really coming from Michigan. So there's a lot of deceptive advertising that they're doing. The first thing that people need to know is that when you drink either Dasani or Aquafina water, that's put out, Dasani by Coca-Cola and Aquafina by Pepsi, that is simply tap water, which has been put through some extra filters and then sold for many, many times the cost of tap water. I did a little study in Boston and found that those two brands were about 1,200 times the cost of turning on your tap.
So that's 200 times more than 1,000 times the cost of a tap. And I should mention that one of the places that Coca-Cola bottles their Dasani water is right here in Queens. In Masspath, Queens, they bottle Dasani water. So, and it's New York City tap water. And it's interesting that a company that was called New York City Water, they bottled New York City water and were upfront about it. Well, they went out of business. Whereas Coca-Cola can bottle New York City tap water, call it something else, and everybody goes, oh, this is so much better than New York City water.
The other company that is actually number one in bottled water sales is Nestle, and they bottle under a number of different brands. And in the New York area, the brands that you're most likely to get are Poland Spring, which comes from Maine, and also Deer Park, which is bottled in Pennsylvania. Now, these are spring water sources, and what it's important to know is that bottled water is not regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency like our municipal water is. It's regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. Somehow there's an amazing transformation that once water goes into a bottle, it's no longer water, it's a food. Would you believe it? So FDA does not do inspections itself. It depends on the industry. They're only required to test once a month. And as a result, there have been a lot of studies showing the problems with bottled water. And, for instance, the Natural Resources Defense Council did a study looking at 1,000 different bottles of 103 brands of bottled water. They found contamination exceeding allowable limits in at least one sample from about a third of the brands. This is included. They found synthetic organics, bacteria, and arsenic. The other thing that's come up recently is that they're finding that as soon as another study done in Europe, not the NRDC, has found that as soon as you cap the bottles of water, antimony starts to leach into the water. And after 3 months, the level of antimony, which, of course, is toxic, has risen by 175 times. So there's quite a few problems just with the water that goes into the bottled water. The problems with the plastic itself is a whole other set of concerns.
Well, let me chime in here with a couple of ecological observations as well. I mean, in addition to these
kind of amazing revelations that Ruth is offering us. I'd like to add that even if the bottled water were everything the advertising claimed it was, and far more pure and safe than our tap water, in fact, two things. First of all, we all have an intimate relationship with our tap water, whether we drink it or not. And that's because most of our exposure to chemical contaminants in tap water don't come to us through drinking, but rather through inhalation. And that happens every time you turn on your dishwasher, or you step into a shower, or you turn on your washing machine, or even flush your toilet and create turbulence. The volatile contaminants will evaporate into your airspace, and you will breathe them in. And when we've quantified this, it turns out
when you
out
say
that,
volatile contaminants, what do you mean?
Well, I'm talking about things like byproducts from chlorination. These are things called trihalomethanes. I'm talking about pesticides, or in the case of my hometown drinking water, there were trace amounts of dry cleaning fluid, perchloroethylene. So these are volatile, meaning they quickly evaporate, and when you raise the temperature of the water, for example, by taking a shower, it turns out that bathing and showering is the exposure equivalent of drinking a half a gallon of tap water. So you can drink all the bottled water you want from France or Iceland or Fiji, but you take a 10-minute shower, and that's the exposure equivalent of drinking a half a gallon of tap water. So we cannot opt out of the water cycle. We are part of our drinking water, whether we carry bottled water around or not. And in fact, you might remember those children that were profiled in the movie and book called A Civil Action. Very good book, sort of mediocre movie starring John Travolta. Those kids in Woburn, Massachusetts, their parents alleged there was a cancer cluster of leukemias in those kids from contaminated drinking water. Interestingly enough, part of what came out in the trial was that many of that water was so contaminated it tasted bad. So, in fact, a lot of the parents bought bottled water for their children to drink. They got leukemia anyway, and the rate of exposure was through the contamination of indoor air. So we really can't save ourselves by drinking bottled water. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that even if this water were so much better for our health, it's just not a sustainable option to tap water. I mean, water is heavy. It weighs 8 pounds a gallon. And spending all this fossil fuel transporting water from France, Iceland, Fiji, wherever, to us here in New York State, it's just not a sustainable practice. Ruth made mention of the manufacturing and disposal of the plastic bottles itself. That's something I've done some investigative work into. And the environmental impacts of that are considerable. So I actually follow the noted economist Monica Hargreaves in my thinking on this. You know, Monica has flown around the world and helped nation states with their currency, has helped start a local currency here in Ithaca. And she's also a master composter. And when people ask her, well, how does composting and economics fit together, she'll say, well, I like both things because I hate waste. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel as an ecologist. Drinking bottled water is a very wasteful practice. It's not like organic food. And so whether you're motivated by your own health to think about drinking water, or whether you're motivated by larger ecological concerns and a concern for generating more waste, in either case, whether you're thinking collectively or individually, bottled water really doesn't make sense.
And just to add to what you said, Sandra, the figures that we have, it's about 10 billion bottles of plastic a year that gets thrown along the roadside and into our landfills.
10 billion with a B?
Yes, with a B. And it's not the companies, the corporations that are paying for that landfill cost. It's taxpayers.
And since that show was recorded, I don't believe that Coca-Cola bottles Dasani water in New York City any longer.
And on the CD, you will hear the full episode, which includes the financial cost of bottled water, where it comes from and what's in it, who regulates it, tap versus bottled water, plastic leaching, plastic life cycle, global warming, sustainability, cancer, water rights, corporate responsibility, municipal water quality, and web resources. Bottled water is implicated in global warming. Manufacturing and transportation of bottled water uses fossil fuels.
Bottled water won't save you from bad water. You can get the CD of the entire show for a donation of $35. That is also a part of a package of four CDs with five shows for $75. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org. The package includes
shows about the early days of fractivism, health effects of indoor plants, and demystifying the electricity grid. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
You're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Coming up now are the NYC Raging Grannies singing "The Climate Is A-Changin'."
Gather round, people, we want you to hear. Our ozone depletion, it's something we fear. The ice cap is melting, hot future is near. If the earth to you is worth saving, goodbye to the comforts we all hold so dear. For the climate, it is a-changing. Our planet cannot continue this way. Warming brings storms and disasters each day. So listen quite closely to all that we say. Our weather has been rearranging. Don't burn fossil fuels, it's a small price to pay. For the climate, it is a-changing. The earth will soon be wrapped. Holes in the ozone are hardly a joke. Our atmosphere's rearranging. Let's clean up the planet before we all croak. For the climate, it is a-changing. We value the earth, to us all it belongs. We're all in the same boat. This cannot go on. It's time to take action and right former wrongs. Priorities need rearranging. Tell your representatives to hear our song. For the climate, it is a-changing. For the climate, it is a-changing.
A DVD of the Raging Grannies with Pete Seeger at the Clearwater Revival is available for a donation of $40. You can get an audio CD of the Raging Grannies alone, called Still Aging, Still Raging, for just $35.
Butterflies. Who doesn't love butterflies? Any DVD about butterflies is automatically beautiful, and with leverage operatives... butterfly experts telling you fascinating things about them and how to protect them, you have a gorgeous and interesting present for any lover of the environment. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org and it can be yours. Dear Reggie Johnson, our engineer, will now play the butterfly clip for you.
Yeah, I noticed at the vivariums that some butterflies land on people and some never do. So I suppose that that's just sort of individual habits, or
Their behavior varies a lot. There's a more toxic type of butterfly that we call it a paper kite, a big black and white butterfly that flies very slowly and doesn't seem to have a care in the world and lands on people all the time and just doesn't seem to be afraid of anything. And then you get some of these little delicate heliconius butterflies that are very skittish and don't ever land on, or hardly ever land on anybody, and are very easily spooked, and everything in between. And also depends on the stage of life they're at. when they're older, they slow down like we do, and they don't move around as much, and they're easier to handle because they're just not as active.
And I hate to be disillusioning, but the ones that land on you, it's not love. It's they're looking for salts and nutrients in your skin. And the ones that do that in nature that would be on the ground puddling are the ones that are more likely to land on your skin. And the ones that are strict nectar feeders will probably be less likely to do that.
Right, and they do that in the wild as well, not just in the vivariums. I was just out in Indiana at the Lepidopterist annual meeting, and the two butterflies that were doing that to me, again, landing and drinking sweat, were the tawny emperor and the hackberry butterfly, wow. Which will do that reliably, and most butterflies will not do. Most of the butterflies in Indiana were not doing that, but those ones.
I'm going to have to tell a monarch story. I was at Point Pelee, Point Pelee during monarch migration around Labor Day, and we were watching the monarchs migrate over Lake Erie, coming from Canada and going all the way across, and some of them would just barely not make it. So we'd scoop them up and put them on a plan and stuff. But a lot of them, I was the tallest person in our little group, and I was wearing a hoodie. I had a little point to it. And the monarch started, one of them landed on my head. And once one of them landed on my head, then a bunch of monarchs decided, oh, that's a safe place. And suddenly my head was covered with like five monarchs. And
I hope you got a photograph.
And
no.
I got a photograph and it didn't come out. Something happened. It was back in the days of 35mm cameras. And if I would walk in one direction, they would sort of be in a circle around the point of the hood. If I walked in a different direction, they would like parallel park.
They line up.
It was the weirdest sort of thing. All my friends are delighted. I couldn't actually see it. So I really regret it.
A dark blue hoodie with these bright orange butterflies wow. lined up on your head.
It's a strange sort of thing. But I was also fascinated because, of course, some of the monarchs didn't quite make it. Now, if we weren't there, would they have died, or would the wave would have died?
Yeah, a lot of them die. I don't know. I don't remember what the percentage is that's estimated that make the whole trip, but it's a very small percentage.
If you go out on pelagic trips in the fall, you'll see
trip going out in the ocean.
Yeah, out in the ocean to watch birds. And I actually haven't done this in a couple of years when the monarchs have been thinner. But if you have a good monarch here, you're going to have monarchs streaming south over the out towards George's Bank and stuff like that. And they're not going to live.
Right.
They're not going to make it all the way. But they're following their instincts, and they don't really know where the next land is going to be. Right. And so a certain number of them are just going to go out there, and that'll be it.
Not to give any thumbs up to the oil and gas industry, but the monarchs that fly down to Mexico have been known to use the oil rigs out in the Gulf of Mexico as stopping off points.
Yeah, birds do the same thing.
And that helps them out. What can I tell you?
Everything is related, and we're just about out of time. So, any final words to listeners, especially the gardeners out there?
Just for gardeners should be aware that they can make a difference. More than with birds and with many other kinds of wildlife, individual effort can actually contribute to stabilizing and increasing, either by having host plants or if it's a really dry year to provide nectar so that the adults don't, sort of perish in a local area. And it's an area where you can both have fun, increase your enjoyment, and also do something that's useful.
Yeah. I know there are urban gardens with butterfly plant areas,
mm-hmm. right.
so that when a school group comes to the garden, they can go right to that place and hopefully see something.
Right. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to talk about monarchs again. There's a... No, but there are websites that will.
It's a bit of an in joke.
There are websites that will send you milkweed seeds that are appropriate for your vicinity for free, because people are trying to increase the host plants for monarchs, especially for when they're migrating. So that's a good thing to do. I got some and planted them in my backyard, and hopefully some monarchs will find them when they're migrating through. But this is something anybody can do anywhere in the country.
I remember going to a anti-fracking protest where Governor Cuomo was at the time, And one of the people was had a whole tray of little milkweed plants. So here's somebody from Occupy Wall Street walking around with milkweed plants, you know, save the monarchs and handing them out.
My last thought would be for people to get out and see and enjoy the incredibly diverse fauna that we have here in the Northeast. I'll give you just one quick example. In all of Europe, there are 5 swallowtails. In all of England, or Great Britain, there's 1 swallowtail, and they call it the swallowtail because they only have one swallowtail. In New York City parks alone, it is not difficult in a season to see 5 species of these magnificent swallowtails, including the giant swallowtail, which is making a very big inroads in the Northeast, the pipevine swallowtail that we talked about that feeds on Aristolochia, the black swallowtail, the eastern tiger swallowtail, and the spicebush swallowtail. There's no place in Europe. There's no city in Europe where you can see 5 swallowtails in a season. And sometimes in New York City, you can see 4 or 5 in a day. And so people should appreciate the incredible fauna and diversity that the Northeast has to offer.
I had been reading about Monsanto's Roundup, which has this chemical glyphosate, which turns out is decimating the monarch butterflies and other populations of pollinators. Because of the crops they're putting in, Roundup-ready GMO crops from Monsanto with corn and soybean, like you were seeing all over Indiana, and also cotton, and it's killing off all the milkweed plants, so there's nothing for the monarchs. So there's like 90% population has declined in less than 20 years. So check out act@fwwatch.org. That's Food and Water Watch. And find out more about that. act@fwwatch.org.
Well, thank you, Mercy Van Vlack, and thank you to Carol Butler and Harry Zerlin and Rick Check. And this is Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
That was fun. The whole show is like that. Our butterfly show is available to you as a DVD for $40. Charlie Olson put wonderful graphics in it. We also have a DVD on bees for the same price. The two together, butterflies and bees, are available as a package for $75 donation. Call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org.
Stumped for late gifts? Trying to find something for your favorite environmentalist or a science teacher or a fan? The special premiums we've shared with you today have just become available again on the website. We have films, music, and radio, CDs and DVDs, and even a WBAI flash drive. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
We enjoyed revisiting some of our most important shows with you. You can help us keep WBAI alive and healthy and ecologic on the air. Please help us by donating and choose your premium gift. Become a BAI buddy or make a donation to tell us you are out there listening. Becoming a BAI buddy would mean so much to WBAI and Ecologic because it would support our campaign to cover our monthly transmitter rent. Very important. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
This stuff isn't available anywhere else. It's not in stores. It's not on Amazon. And you will get it before Christmas. Matt, our number one volunteer, assures us he will make that happen.
And join us next week on Friday, December 10th at 2:30 p.m. for the latest developments in solar technology.
To get environmental news on a variety of topics and to listen to this show again and any of our past shows, go to www.ecoradio.org. That's www.ecoradio.org.
You can rely on Ecologic to bring you news of upcoming events and people making a difference. This is the most important role for Ecologic and WBAI. Help keep us on the air. Choose your premium at www.give2wbai.org. Or call 212-209-2950.
For those of you online, please sign up for our email list to stay connected with us. Those of you on social media, please search for Eco-Logic.
And thanks to our terrific engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you.
Oh, yeah. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us December 10th at 2:30 p.m. for new developments in solar technology.
WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Mohammed. Here are some headlines. The parents of Michigan school shooting suspect Ethan Crumbly, James and Jennifer Crumbly, have been charged with involuntary manslaughter in the aftermath of the November 30th attack at Oxford High School that left four Michigan teens dead and several people injured. Police said the teen's father purchased a gun used in the attack just days prior to the shooting. Prosecutors say the gun was in the boy's backpack during a meeting with his parents and teachers just before the shooting to discuss reports of his concerning behavior. After the meeting, the teen was allowed to return to class. Shortly after that, he opened fire outside a school bathroom. At least 60 schools in Michigan closed yesterday after police warned of a potential copycat killings following the high school shooting Tuesday. Hawaii became the fifth state to confirm the newly discovered Omicron variant in the United States after New York announced five new cases Thursday. The variant has also been confirmed in California, Colorado, and Minnesota. Scientists say it may take weeks to fully understand the variant's transmissibility and severity, as well as its potential to evade vaccines and cause reinfections. Doctors tracking the outbreak in South Africa have said there is evidence that the variant is more transmissible and presents high reinfection risk. The number of long-term unemployed fell by 136,000 in November, continuing a downward trend since early 2021 as the economy and labor market have rebounded. However, the decrease was the smallest since April, when long-term unemployment fell by 35,000 people. Long-term unemployment is a period of joblessness that lasts more than 6 months. The labor force grew, as did the share of employed Americans, according to the November jobs report issued today. More than one-third of all food produced in the United States is thrown out, according to an EPA report. The study says that wasted food represents billions of dollars in lost value and is a significant threat to achieving climate goals, as food thrown away in landfills produces methane. The wasted food also represents enough calories to feed more than 150 million people annually. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Thursday proposed reestablishing a World War II era civilian vigilante military force that he would control. The Guard would consist of 200 volunteer civilians, quote, trained in the best emergency response techniques that would aid in the event of natural disasters or other state emergencies, according to a press release. If Florida moves ahead with the DeSantis plan to reestablish the civilian force, it would become the 23rd active state guard in the country. Representative Charlie Crist, who is running as a Democrat to challenge the governor in 2022, tweeted, quote, "No governor should have his own hand-picked secret police." The Biden administration has rejected calls to ban the use of lethal autonomous weapons known as killer robots. During a United Nations meeting in Geneva Thursday, the U.S. proposed establishing a code of conduct for their use. Activists across the globe have long warned of the growing threat posed by robots that use artificial intelligence and lethal weapons to kill without any human overseeing the process. Currently in Washington, it's cloudy and 52 degrees. In New York,